We begin the current daf Masechta Nedarim, daf Mem Zayin. We begin on the top of the Yamud, where the Gemara continues explaining our Mishnah of the previous daf. That is, the Mishnah concluded by mentioning a differentiation in regards to if someone wants to make someone else's house forbidden on him as a kainim, as a neder, a difference if he says, Beischa, your house is forbidden to me, or Bayezeh, this house, although it happens to be that person's house, but he says, this house. When he says, your house, so it's only forbidden as long as that person owns it and is alive. If he dies, or if he sells it off, it's not his house anymore, and then it would be permitted. But if he says, Bayezeh, this house, so that even if he dies, or if he sells it, it's still that house, and therefore it's still going to be forbidden. And that's what the Gemara quotes, Ha'im al-Chaveir v'chulu, regarding that case of the differentiation. Now, related to this, the Gemara brings Boy Avimi. Avimi asked the following question. Kainim l'Bayezeh sha'aton nichnas, where if someone uses the words Bayezeh, this house, not Beisi or Beischo, it's Bayezeh. He tells somebody else, you're forbidden as a neder to come into this house. So Meis oishemachru la'achor mahu. So if he dies, or if he sells to someone else, what's the halacha? In other words, someone wants someone else to be forbidden to come into his house. But it doesn't say Beisi. It says Bayezeh. What's the halacha? In other words, although we said in the Mishnah, as we just said, a differentiation between if someone says Bayezeh or Beischa, when he says this house, even if it's sold to someone else, it's still going to be forbidden. So what's the Gemara's question? What's Avimi's question? Of course it's going to be forbidden even after the person dies or if he sells it off to someone else. And that is what the Gemara's question is, that maybe that's only when someone else is making someone else's house forbidden on him, where because the person could make himself forbidden on this house, whether it's that person who owns it right now, or if he sells it to someone else, because he can make some other object, even what's not his, forbidden on himself. But the question of the Gemara is regarding his friend, for someone else. And that is, although when he uses the word Bayezeh, most definitely that is inclusive of forever, even if he sells it off to someone else, or if he dies, as is obvious from the halacha of our Mishnah. But on that, is the question is that he doesn't have the right, although he owns this house, to make it forbidden for when it's not his anymore. Because then, essentially, it's like what's called nichsi chaver al chaver. A person can make someone else's things forbidden on himself, and his own thing forbidden on himself. And he can make his own thing forbidden on someone else. But he can't make someone else's thing forbidden on someone else. That he doesn't have the rights for that. And therefore, essentially, the Gemara's question is, Adam Eisru Davar Shabishusai, could someone make something that's in his domain right now forbidden to somebody else, for when it leaves his domain? Or maybe not. And that is because, and truthfully, is that the Gemara's question is not specifically regarding does Bayezeh work for even when it leaves or not. Because that, again, as we explained in the Mishnah, saying Bayezeh is essentially the same thing as trying to say that even when it leaves my domain. Now, still the Gemara's question is that even if you explicitly said, I want this house to be forbidden for you, even when I die or even when I sell it, that maybe still it's not going to work. And that is because Avimi wasn't wondering regarding the terminology of Bayezeh. Because again, obviously the word Zeh means forever, as obvious from the halacha of our Mishnah. His primary question is that even if that's what the Madar is trying to do, question is, can he do this? Because since now, ultimately, this house is his, therefore he can make it forbidden even when it's not his anymore? Or no? Or do we say that once it leaves his rishus because he dies or because he sells it, then it's like nichsi chaver chaver, because then it's someone else's thing and it's not his anymore, and therefore he can't make it forbidden in that time onto someone else? That was Avimi's question. So Amar Rava, so Rava says, Toshima, it's being arrived from a Mishnah Masechtas Baba Kama. The Mishnah says, Ha'imer lebenai, if someone tells his son, Kainim, you're forbidden as a neder, she'iat anenali, that you can't have pleasure from me. Umeis, and then the father dies. So Yerushana, so he inherits his father, because he's not getting it from his father, he's getting it from the halachas of Yerusha, so that's permitted. But if the father says, b'chayev u'b'maisa, that he's forbidden to have pleasure from him, from this son, from his father, whether he's alive or when he's dead, and then umeis, and then he dies, so then the Mishnah says, lo Yerushana, that he cannot inherit it. Now, Shema Minah, obviously we can infer from that Mishnah that when someone explicitly says that something should be forbidden to somebody else, even when it leaves his domain, again, as in this case, when he dies, that Adam Eisu Davar Shabishu Zolikashi Yitzim Shusa, that a person could make something forbidden for when it leaves his domain. Like over here, that since he died, it's still going to be us that the son is not going to inherit it. And therefore, the reason must be because since right now it's in his domain, he could make it forbidden for even afterwards. And the reason being is because since he explicitly said that it should be forbidden even after it's out of his rishos, the issa, the prohibition, takes effect. And again, therefore, that answers Avimi's question, because it's obvious to us that when you say, Bayezeh, this house, it's like explicitly saying that I want it to be forbidden even when it's not mine anymore, as is obvious from the halacha of our Mishnah. So Shema Mina then answers Avimi's question that if someone tells his friend that Bayezeh Shata Nichnas, and then he dies or he sells it to someone else, that it will still be forbidden to the other person, and it's not considered like not being able to do that because of like saying that someone else in the chasim is forbidden on that other person, which usually doesn't work. Now, the Ran wonders that as the way he just explained the Gemara, that the Gemara, Avimi's question was only based on can you make it forbidden, but not if Bayezeh means that, and that is Bayezeh is essentially the same thing as saying I want it to be forbidden after I sell to someone else. But on that he wonders, because the Gemara previously in Membez Membez actually did make that differentiation. The Gemara actually brought this same Mishnah and said, oh, this Mishnah is different. Yes, it's going to be usur even after it leaves his domain, meaning when he dies, because he specified he wants it to be forbidden to his son even when he's alive or even when he's dead. Now, in other words, what the Gemara was saying was that even though the word zeh, as we find in our Mishnah, regarding the neider himself, it means forever. When someone says someone else's thing should be forbidden on him, and he says the term zeh and not beischa, that's forbidden forever. But still the Gemara and Dav Membeis said that we could differentiate and say regarding a madr, making someone else forbidden, that maybe it's going to be permitted even when you use the term zeh. And it's only when you explicitly say it, so then that's where the Mishnah Baba Kama is saying that it's still going to be forbidden afterwards. So therefore, how is it so obvious that our Gemara is considering zeh regarding someone making someone else forbidden the same as we're learning from the Mishnah Masechtas Baba Kama when you explicitly say it should be forbidden even after it leaves his domain? So that the Ran says is that because the Gemara ultimately rejects that interpretation to make that differentiation, and our Gemara here is relying on the Maskana, which holds that there is no difference between zeh or being mafarish explicitly saying, and that zeh is the same thing as saying I want to be forbidden forever, and therefore that wasn't the Gemara's question. The Gemara's primary question was, can you do that? And we see from the Mishnah Baba Kama, you could do that, you can make something forbidden even for when it leaves your domain. Now just one point that the Ram points out is that although this Mishnah Baba Kama that we're quoting says that if the father says he wants his stuff to be forbidden to his son when he's alive and when he's dead, that the son doesn't inherit it, doesn't mean that the son actually doesn't inherit it. And the reason being is because the primacy of that halacha is just that it's forbidden to him to have a anah from it. But it doesn't mean that he's not going to have the rights in those properties. Because actually the end of that Mishnah in Masechtas Baba Kama says, so what does this son do since it is forbidden for him? So it says that he gives it to his sons or to his brothers, and if he doesn't have anything, what he does is he borrows, and his creditors could collect from those assets which he inherited from his father, which his father said should be forbidden to him, both when he's living and when he's dead. And that's the proof. Because if he actually didn't inherit those properties, then how could he give it to his brothers or to his sons, and how would his creditors be able to collect from those properties? Rather, obviously, they are his properties. It's just that he's not allowed to have pleasure from it because of his father's neder. And it's just because the Reisha said Yirushena, which was saying that when he only says in his lifetime, then after his lifetime, it's even permitted for the son to have pleasure from it. So that's why the Sefer said the words Lo Yirushena, but again, it doesn't really mean Lo Yirushena. It just means to say he can't utilize it to have pleasure from it, but he could use it in other things to pay up debts or give it to his brother and to his sons. Now the Gemara moves on and asks a similar type of it quotes a Mishnah and asks a similar type of question, what we did to the halacha of our Mishnah. So the Gemara brings Tnan Hasam. We learn there in the Mishnah later on in this Masechta and Daf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph that says as follows: Kainim peiros ha'elu alive. Someone says that I'm making forbidden based on the nether, these fruits on me, they're forbidden to me. Or kainim hein al pi, or they're forbidden these fruits on my mouth. Or he uses the words koin mehen lifi, or they're forbidden to my mouth. In other words, whoever uses one of these similar type of terminologies, basically making these fruits forbidden to him through a neder. So then, two halachas. Asra b'chilufehen, he becomes forbidden in things that it gets exchanged with. In other words, if he takes these now forbidden fruits because of the neder that he made, and let's say he sells it, so now he exchanged it for money, so now the money is going to be forbidden to him too. And uvigidulehen, and their outgrowths. In other words, if he takes these forbidden fruits because of his neder and he plants them, whatever grows from it is also going to be forbidden. The reason being is because we consider it like hektish. That's what kinamis have the same halacha as carbon, as hektish. And therefore, just like by hektish, it has sanctity. And if you some outgrowth of that hektish will have the same halachic status as hektish, and therefore it's going to be forbidden. That's the halacha of that mishnah, where when you make a neder on something, not only is that item forbidden, but even what it's exchanged with, or even what grows out of it. Now, in that boy, Rambam asked the following question. Amar, let's say a person said, and this is similar to the previous halacha, where it was told about the person himself, and then we asked regarding when he does that to someone else, so now the Gemara is going to ask the same type of a question. Amar, if a person says, Kainim peiris ha'elu, in the same type of case, where he's told about specific type of fruits, said that these fruits should be forbidden as a neder al ployni on someone else. So now the Rabbi Bacham's question is, Mahu bechilufehen? What's the halacha regarding the item that is exchanged for? Is that going to be forbidden on that other person too? Now, the Ram points out of a few different points. First of all, he says the Gemara's question is not only regarding kainamais, although that's the form that we're using the question in, and that's the mission that we're quoting, where if a person says, Kainim, this is forbidden on me, even the chiluf, what is exchanged for, and the gidol, what's grown out of it, the outgrowth, is forbidden to him. We're asking now regarding someone else, that you made a neder forbidding these fruits to him, would the exchange and the outgrowth be forbidden to him also? Although according it in that, how did this thing become forbidden that we're then exchanging and having an outgrowth, is through a kainim, through a neder. And that the Ran says it's not necessarily that if it became forbidden through a kainim that we're asking the question. Rather, the question really is relevant to any Isra'na. And the proof of this is, because actually later on the Gemara is going to try to bring a raya, a proof to this question from Halacha of someone that's Mekadosh, gets engaged to a woman with Arla, which Arla is forbidden not because of a neder, forbidden just because the Torah says that the fruits of a tree for the first 2 years are forbidden to have Ana. So you see that the Gemara's question, as we're going to see from its resolution, is regarding anything that is Aser. Here it just happens to be we're talking about it became Aser through a neder. Question is, when something is Aser for somebody else, question is, what's going to be the halacha regarding its outgrowth and its exchange? Moreover, the Ram points out, is that the Gemara's question is not regarding, are you initially allowed to take something that's forbidden to have an off from, which is the same by our law, or a neder, because you said the neder is forbidden to have an off. So the question is not regarding, are you initially allowed to make such an exchange? Because definitely, whatever it's forbidden to have anah from, you're not allowed to sell them to an exchanger because you're going to be having some anah from it. And the reason being, because if you don't say that, and you say that actually the Gemara's question is that we're actually speculating that a person would be allowed to initially sell something that's asa b'anah, well then that would give monetary value to chametz on Pesach, or to a shor haniskal, an ox that has to be stoned, because if you're saying you could exchange it, and therefore you could sell it to a non-Jew, so then that gives it value, then the question would be, then why do we say that if someone steals one of these items, let's say chametz of Pesach or shor haniskal, that is exempt from payment, if it should have a monetary value? We only say it doesn't have any value because it's going to be stoned anyway, and because chametz is also about no. But if you say that we're entertaining that you could sell it, then that would give it value. So obviously the Ran says that likat chila, initially for sure it's forbidden to go ahead and exchange something that's asba no. The question of Ram Bacham is regarding if someone went and violated it and did make the exchange, that's the doubt regarding that status now, that exchanged item, what halacha does that have? Is that also going to be forbidden or not? Third point the Ran says is that regarding somebody else, That was not the Gemara's question, that obviously, biblically, it's obvious it's going to be permitted to somebody else. And the reason being is because when you exchange an item that's forbidden for something else, obviously that, let's say, one way of exchange is when you sell something, and then instead of that item you get money, It's obviously that that money does not have the prohibitory status of that Isra Hana that you just sold, because it's only by idol worship and by Shemitah produce where we say that. And as it's brought in the Gemara in Masechta Chulin, that the chametz of someone that violated Pesach and held on to it after Pesach, that it's going to be permitted because of the exchange of what it is. It's not the actual thing, it's considered an exchange. But we see that something that's forbidden to have anah from, the exchange most definitely is permitted because it's not matzvah as damav. It doesn't get the same halachic status. But what the Gemara's question is over here is, did we say rabbinically it, what you exchange it for is going to be forbidden or not? And so what is the Gemara's question? As the Gemara explains, the Gemara's question is, mi amrinan, do we say that when we learn in that Mishnah that we're going to quote later on, Daf Nun Zayin and Aleph, that when someone says these fruits are forbidden to me, that the Mishnah says he's forbidden in an exchange and regarding what grows out of it, that what's the reason for it? It's because it's based on the intent of the one who's making the neder. Now the reason would be because the one who's making the kavana, and he's the one that got a delay by him when he's making this thing forbidden on him, that although generally an exchange, meaning let's say ultimately that you're going to sell it, whatever it is that you're going to do and you're going to get something else for it, is considered a davar shelo ba'olam, it's not here yet, but since a person, you see, could make something that's not in his domain forbidden on himself. How do you see that? Because a person could say that that person's house is forbidden on me, although it's not his house. So the object that he's forbidding could be not his, which is his friend's object. He can make forbidden on himself. So therefore, logic would say that so too, Adam Eiser Dabba Shaloi Bala Eilam Al Asmai, that a person could also make another thing which is not in his domain forbidden on himself, which is a reference to chilufin, to an exchange. Although that money is not here yet, because I didn't take this forbidden item and exchange it yet, but when you're making the nether in these fruits, inclusive in that could be what you're ultimately going to exchange it for. Because although it's not here yet, but you see it doesn't have to be here, meaning in your domain, to make it forbidden, just like you could make someone else's thing forbidden on yourself. Now that logic would only apply to the nether himself when he's forbidding it on himself. However, but regarding the case that Rambam B'chama is asking, regarding when you're making it forbidden unto someone else, you cannot make someone else's fruits forbidden on someone else. In other words, when you're trying to prohibit someone else, it has to be in your domain. It has to be your object that you're forbidding on him, unlike when someone's making forbidden on himself. So therefore, maybe we would say that ain odam oisei davar shelo ba'olam chaver. Hence, logic would say that no, you cannot make chilufin forbidden on someone else when you're making a neder on him, because chilufin is not in your domain right now. And when it comes to forbidding someone else, it has to be in your domain, just like we see regarding the object itself has to be in your domain. So too, we would say regarding the halacha of chilufin, and therefore the halacha of that Mishnah would not apply to make chilufin also when it's forbidding someone else. Oy, Dilma, or maybe the Gemara says, as we continue on to the second side of this question, maybe that when we learn in the Mishnah of Nun Zayin that it's forbidden to utilize the chilupin, is not because, like the first side of the Gemara said, because of the person's intention, meaning when he made the neder, what was the neder inclusive of? That includes even things that are not in his domain. That's not the reason. Rather, the halacha is because, rabbinically, the rabbis made that whatever is forbidden to have anah from, they said that now whatever you exchange it for, again, although biblically we said that only Avodah Zarah and Shemitah produce, what you exchange it for gets that same halachic status, but rabbinically they said that we're going to penalize when someone goes out and exchanges the item, which is an Isra Hanan himself, then we say that, okay, rabbinically we're going to say that even that exchange item will also be forbidden on him. So therefore, as we get here on Tamid Beis, the Gemara says, I dilma mishum dechilupin ki gedulin dami. Maybe the reason is, again, not because of that, that's the person's intention when he's making the neder, that he can make it even on somebody that's not here, and therefore it's inclusive of only when the person's making the neder on himself, but not for someone else. No, maybe it's rabbinic halacha, the chilupin are kigidulun dami. Just like an outgrowth is the thing itself, and no matter who it is that's being made forbidden on, that thing will be forbidden on him. so tu chilupin, and therefore loishnahu v'loishnachaveri. Therefore, essentially, it shouldn't make a difference if the neder was being made on himself or was being made on his friend, because ultimately it's an intrinsic rabbinic issa where a forbidden item. Now, who cares if you made it on yourself or someone else made it forbidden to you? It's a forbidden item. And they said that we're going to transfer this prohibition, this prohibitory status, if you sell it to someone else and you get something else in that exchange, that itself will also be forbidden. As we said, look, at chil, you're definitely not allowed to sell something that's asabahana to do chilupin. And therefore, rabbinically, it's going to extend to that exchanged item. And therefore, that's the other side of the question to say, okay, if that's the case, then that will apply to somebody else too, and it won't be only for the person himself. So that's the Gemara's question. If you understand the principle underlying the halacha of that Mishnah, Daf Nun Zayin, you'll know if it's based on the kavana of the neider, then it's going to be just for himself and not for someone else, because that's a halacha that's related to the principle of making a neder, or which relates to the halacha concept of hekdesh, or do you say that no, that it's just a principle that the Chacham said regarding a prohibited item that we're going to extend it to its chilupin, and therefore that would apply even to his friend. Now, the Ran wonders that, why did Ram Bachama have to say this question related to somebody else? He said it in the way of, there's halacha in that Mishnah, and now, what's the halacha would it apply to a mudr when you're making someone else forbidden? Because the Ran says, he could have asked the same question with the halachic ramifications regarding the neider himself, like the same case in that Mishnah. The Mishnah they was told about when someone makes these fruits forbidden on himself. So he said it's asa in chilupin and gidulin. But on that, the Ran says, the Rabbi Bachama could have posed this question regarding himself, and they, in other words, that there would have been the same ramifications. In other words, is the reason of the Mishnah because of the intention of the one who made the neder? And therefore what? Which was like the first tzad of our Gemara. So therefore, even if someone else exchanges it for something else, still the chilupin is going to be asr to him. Why? Because when he creates a neder, he could create an isr of a neder not just for something that's in his domain, as we see someone else's item who's not in his domain, he can make forbidden on himself. So therefore, when he makes a neder, kain and peiris elu alai, that would include even something that's not below ilam yet. And hence, it's not because he exchanged it. Even if someone else exchanged it, doesn't make a difference. His neder was going to be for anything that's related to this item, even that's not in his domain yet. Now, but however, if you say like the second option of the Gemara, that the reason why chilupin is asr is because it's a rabbinic penalty, that we said that whatever you're going to exchange it for will also have the same isr hanah, but that would be necessarily only if he did the chilupin. But if someone else made the exchange, then it would be permitted the chilupin because we're not going to penalize him. We penalize the one that made the exchange. But he didn't do it. So then therefore the chilupin should be permitted. So you could ask the same question with halachic relevance and ramifications even regarding to the person himself. Why now go ahead and create a new case when he's doing it to someone else? So in that the Ran says, because actually it was obvious to Ram Bachama in regards to the neider, when someone's making something forbidden on himself, even if someone else exchanges it, that the chilupin will be forbidden to him. The reason being is as follows. The way we describe this case is when the person says, peiros eilu, these fruits are forbidden to me. Not when he categorically says that fruits are forbidden to him, which has a different halacha, as we'll explain later on in Perek HaNeider. But when he says eilu, so that essentially, when he makes such a neder, that gives these items halachic status as hekdesh. So once you made it like hekdesh, so automatically we know that it's like the first tzad of the Gemara, meaning even when someone else exchanges it, it doesn't make a difference. The halacha will always be that it's going to be forbidden him forever. Now, what the Gemara's question was, do we say that even when he exchanges it, in other words, regarding someone else exchanging it, that wouldn't have been a good ramification? Because even if someone else exchanges it, according to both options in the Gemara, since he said Eilu, it will automatically have halacha like hekdesh. The question, however, was, but when he exchanges it, do we need the words Eilu to go ahead and say that therefore the person will be forbidden in Chilufein and Gidulein? In other words, that the reason why he's forbidden is because his words connote, meaning even if you don't say Eilu, but his inclusive in his words, in his neder, since a person can make a neder, even something Shalei B'la Olam, Therefore, that will include even chilufei, and even if he didn't say elu, to make it like hektish. Now, however, what Rami Bachama's question was, and where there would be halachic relevance, even for the person himself, is do we say that even when he makes the exchange, he does the chilupin? On that, Rami Bachama's question really is, do you still need to have the words elu? Meaning the Mishnah there was talking about that when a person says, kainim peris ha'elu, that I'll lie. When someone says that these fruits are forbidden on me. Question is, are those words elu integral? And the reason being is because if not, if you didn't say elu, which we just said creates like a halachic status of hektish, then actually it would not become forbidden in the chilufin and the gedulein, because the only reason why it becomes forbidden is, like the first sad in the Gemara, is because it's a halacha in neder, which is kainim, which is like hektish. Hektish is something that will be forbidden even for something that's not b'shusay now, because we saw that that's the understanding of a neder, that it could create it even when it's not b'shusay. So, but it's only when you say elu, which gives it that quality of like hektish. Or maybe Rambam is asking that no, if the person, the one who's making the neder on himself, if he makes the swap, if he does the chilupin, you actually do not need elu. And the reason being is because when we say chilufin is aser, it's intrinsic, like gidulin is intrinsic to the item. The Rabbanan said the chilufin is intrinsic as an iser. And therefore, that was really what Rami Bachama's question was. Therefore, then even by a mudr, when you're doing it to somebody else, it would be aser, which was the second tzad in the Gemara. Now, if that's the case, so then why does the Mishnah on Daf Nun Zayin use the words elu, if there is such an option that for the person himself to be forbidden, is even when he doesn't use the word elu, is only because when someone else makes the swap. When he makes the swap, then you don't need to have elu. And the reason why you don't need to have elu is because it's intrinsic to be aser, and therefore the mudr, when it's to someone else, would also be aser. And so why do you say the words elu? Is when someone else does it, we're there then, we're not going to penalize him, usually if it's someone else doing it, even if we say chilufin ki gedulein, because that's just a penalty, that's when you need to say elu, so that it should have the same halacha like hektish, then it's going to be aser, even if someone else is doing the chilupin. But on that, the Ran says, you're right. Truth is, the Gemara, Rambam Chama, could have posed the question, even regarding the neider himself, where you don't say elu, as we just described the case, where it would have been a ramifications when he himself does the chilupin, what's the halacha by chilupin? Which is essentially the same question that applies to the mudr, which is how Rambam Chama phrases the question. It's just because he wanted to keep the uniformity of the case of the Mishnah. The Mishnah spoke about the case of when someone says it's forbidden on himself, which we call the neider, kainim peris ha'elu, a lie. Now, we said the reason why he has to use ha'elu is because then it would be obvious, because if he didn't use the word elu, then the halacha would be a little bit different if someone else went and made the exchange. So that's why the Mishnah uses the word elu, but essentially there is still a question that we could ask regarding the Mishnah, what would be if he doesn't say ha'elu? Because again, then there would be a question, if he himself does the chilupin, which then do we say, like the second side in the Gemara, that we penalize because it's intrinsic chilupin ki gedulein? Or do we say like the first option in the Gemara, where if he didn't say elu, then actually when he that it would not be aser, because it's only based on elu, which makes it like hektish. So that is what really the Gemara Rami Chama could have asked, but it's only because the Mishnah used the word ha'elu, so that he phrased it also by using ha'elu, which the words ha'elu are only a question regarding achar, because when a person himself says the word ha'elu, then obviously like the Mishnah of Nazayin says, there's no question, it's always going to be aser. So we want to be able to phrase the question, and therefore we kept the uniformity of the words ha'elu, like it says in the Mishnah, but again, essentially the Gemara's question is, what is it that creates the Issa Chilupin? Is it because, like the Issa of a neder, like a hektish, which is that you could create that Issa even something shaloi bala oilam, but again, that would only be regarding the person himself, that only regarding himself could he make like someone else's things, which is not his, that he can make it forbidden on himself, so too, which didn't come yet, which is not his, he can make it forbidden on himself? Or is it because of, intrinsically, the rabbis say that chilufin is like idulin, that it's like a part of the thing itself, and we're transferring it, so therefore that would apply to any isir hana, that of course it would apply even to somebody else when he makes someone else also ba'hana. So that's the Gemara's question. So on that, Amar of Acha Bamanyumi says, Toshima, come in here, we'll bring a ride from the following b'risa. Ha'im ala ishtoi, koinim shani nena leich. Someone tells his wife, you're forbidden as a neder to have anah from me. Although it says, nan aleich, the Rishonim explained to me and said that he's making her forbidden to have anah from him. Now, and that the Braisa says, what the woman could do is loiva. The woman could borrow money. Now, the creditors could come and collect from the husband. In other words, although her husband's assets are forbidden to her, but still there's obviously a lien, there's a responsibility, an obligation of the husband from his estate to feed his wife. So therefore, the creditors could come and collect from the husband. As the Ran explains that, even according to Chanan, who says that if somebody supports a man's wife, it's like he threw his money away because he didn't lend money to the husband, just to the wife. And who asked you to lend to the wife? That's only when he's feeding her food. But when she's borrowing money from someone else, so then obviously she becomes obligated. It's not like when he's giving her something and as if he's expecting the husband to pay back. He's lending her money. Obviously, she herself has her own responsibility to pay back those debts. Now, that's why the creditors could go and collect from the husband, because of what's known as shibud d'rab nasan. When someone owes someone money, and that other person owes someone else money, which in this case is that the husband owes the wife, and the wife owes the creditor, now the creditor could go and collect from the original person, from the original debtor, and therefore the creditors could go ahead and collect from the husband. That's what the halacha of the braisa is. Now, that the question is, my time of bali chayv in the front. What's the reason that the creditors could go ahead and collect from the husband? Lav mishum de chilufin lav ki gedulin dami? Isn't it obviously because exchange, and as we're going to explain, that there's an exchange over here, which is the money that she's getting from the creditors in regards to the money that's her husband's assets, obviously is not like gedulin. It's obviously not intrinsically like the isra itself, because then she wouldn't be able to borrow the money from the creditors. And that is because the Gemara assumes right now that since at the time when she's borrowing, it's her husband's assets that become indebted to the creditors, so it's like she's doing chilupin, like she's exchanging her husband's assets, which are forbidden on her, to these other people's assets. Because that's what's ultimately happening. The creditors are buying in the front. They're coming and collecting. And still we see that it's permitted. So obviously we see, not like the second side in the Gemara. Chilufin is not like Gidul. It's not like the Isser itself. And therefore, that would answer the Raman Bochama's question that obviously when a person wants to make someone else Usser, he would only be able to make him Usser in the object itself. And not in Chilufin, because Chilufin are not like Gidul. It's not intrinsically an Isser. Now, the Rambam just points out one thing from his teachers, that is, although the Gemara's phraseology is, my time of bale chayv boim in the front, why is it that the creditors could come and collect? That's not really the Gemara's question. How could they come and collect from the husband? Because for them, they're not doing any isser. They're just collecting a debt. What the Gemara is saying is that since ultimately the creditors are going to come and collect, how could she go ahead and borrow in the first place? Because that for her is considered a chilufin. Obviously is that because chilufin is not like gidulin, and that's why it's permitted. So Nadam Arava, he rejects the Rai. He says, no, dimalikit chiluhu delay, maybe initially you're not allowed to. Ve'i avit, it's just that the Rai says, if it's done, it's done. Now, as the Ran explains, it's more than just regards to differentiating between like chilim and the avit. It's actually what it's coming to say is, when you're trying to transfer a prohibited item with a permitted item, initially, you're not allowed to go ahead and do that. Now, moreover, the Ran says, an explanation of the Gemara, could be that the chilufin are like the gedulin, and they are intrinsically usr, and they're going to be usr even after it's done. But what the Gemara is answering is that here it's different, because when she borrows from these creditors, even though her husband now becomes responsible to pay to them, there's no real chilufin that's happening over here. The husband's money is not being exchanged for their money. Therefore, she could borrow and she could eat, even though at a later point in time, they're going to come and collect from the husband. That's what the Gemara means when it says di'evid. In other words, because it's at a later point in time, it's after the fact, where then, when 2 months later, when they come and collect their debts, they're going to collect from the husband, that's not considered chiluvin. Chiluvin is when it happens right now. That is going to be forbidden, even after the fact, and intrinsically usur. Therefore, we could say like the second tzad on the Gemara, and that the neder to someone else would create an isra even in chilufin. Here, the reason why it's permitted by the wife is because no real chilufin is happening right away. It's only b'di'evid, meaning after the fact, at a later point in time, when such a chilufin is happening, and therefore it's permitted. So the Gemara says, El Tashema. Rather, let's bring a raya from a Mishnah Masechet Kedushin. The Mishnah says, Hamakadosh Ba'arlof, if a man gets engaged to a woman by giving her something, a fruit from the first 3 years, which are Isra Hanal, no one's allowed to have any pleasure from that. So in the Mekudesha, she's not considered engaged because you have to give her something worth money and it's not worth any value because it's forbidden for people to have anah from it. Now, however, if Machrin Bekidish Bidmein, if he sells that Arla fruit, and then the money he makes off it, he goes and uses that money and gives her that money to become engaged, then Harezu Mekudeshes, then she is engaged. Now, the Gemara's assumption is because since it's forbidden to have anah from the exchange, from Chilupin, that is, even when you went and you exchanged it, and you're having hanah, in other words, and even when you exchanged it a second time, the Gemara's assumption is, because what happens over here is you took the arla fruit, which is the iser. You exchanged it, meaning you sold it and you got money, that was the first chilufin. Then you go ahead and you exchange that money for a third item that you're having hanah from, meaning the wife, the woman is the what's called chilufei chilufin. The Gemara's assumption is that whatever the exchange, what you exchange will also be aser. And therefore, that's what the Gemara's question is that when a person violates the Isra of transferring, and he goes and he transfers it, gets the money, and then he takes the money and transfers it to the woman, why is she engaged? Why don't you have to get engaged to her a second time? Because if you say that intrinsically the Rabbanan said the Chilufin is Asr, then we should have mandated that he would have to get engaged to her another time, because rabbinically they say that that's not considered something that has value because it's an Isra Anah. So how is it that this chilufi chilufin, the woman herself, how is she permitted to the husband if that should be considered chilufi chilufayin of the thing of Isser, of the Arla? So now the Gemara answers, hachinam here also, likat chiluhu delo. It's only initially that you're not allowed to, and maybe we could say that really chilufin is like idulin. It's only vi'i of it, if it's done, it's done. Now again, as the Haggah of the Vilna Goyin in the Ran, the Ran says essentially the same type of teretz as we said before. It's not the same thing. In other words, initially and even after the fact, it's definitely prohibited for someone to have anah from the chilufin. And therefore, we didn't answer the question. Maybe the halacha of the Mishnah Daf Nun Zayin of when someone says these fruits are forbidden, that he's forbidden the chilufin gidulein, maybe it would be forbidden even when he does it to someone else. Although he cannot go ahead and create a hektish like that or a nedar like that onto someone else, it's because the rabbis intrinsically made the iser of chilufin kigidulein. Now, if that's the case, then why is he engaged to this woman? It's only because here it's chilufei chilufin, that there's a difference after the fact in if it's the actual transfer itself, where there we're going to say it's going to be aser b'hanah even after the fact, because it's like gidulin itself. It's like intrinsically aser, because that's what the rabbis did, and that's how you can make someone else forbidden. The only thing is here it's different, similar to the differentiation in the previous halacha of those of Arla, which is here also where, since by Kedushin, it's not the chilufin that you're having enough from, it's the chilufi chilufin. Because you're not having enough from that money, you're actually having enough from the woman that you got from that money, which is a second level of chilufin. That's where the Gemara is differentiating from chilufin proper, and therefore it doesn't answer the question. Again, it still might be that chilufin is like a kidulehen, and could be when the person makes someone else forbidden in the nether, it actually would apply to make that person us, and not only that object and those fruits, but even in chilufein v'gidulehen.